Aloha. Today's episode is brought to you by the University of Hawaii College of Tropical Agriculture and Human Resources and the Livestock Extension Group.
Aloha. Welcome, everyone, to the Livestock Vala'au, a podcast aimed to provide educational support, information, guidance, and outreach to our livestock stakeholders in Hawaii. We are your hosts, Mele Oshiro and
Shannon Sand.
And today we're going to be talking about poultry nutrition with Dr. Rajesh Jha, who is a professor of animal nutrition with UH Manoa. Thank you, Dr. Jha, for joining us today. And Dr. Jha has been with UH CTAR since 2012 as a professor of animal nutrition. And I've been one of his students. He has worked in various countries, including Canada and New Zealand, focusing on animal nutrition with a variety of livestock species. Dr. Jha, would you like to share more with us about your position at UH Manoa?
Thank you, Mele and Senan. Thanks for having me on this show today. It has been a really pleasure working with you both for a long time and sharing our thoughts on different aspects of the livestock sector and other activities related to our college program. And it's so nice to work always together, you know, and that's something fun to work with, you know. And when you look for my background, actually, I'm veterinarian turned animal nutritionist, because some of you might not be knowing, you simply know I'm professor of animal nutrition, but basically I'm a veterinarian. So actually, I was born and raised in Nepal, you know. And after completing my veterinary degree, I joined public service like you people. But with the Department of Livestock Services of Nepal and work there as a livestock development officer. So I work around 7 years there as a field veterinarian cum livestock extension specialist. You know?
Nice.
And it was really an exciting time, exciting job, because you got to work directly with farmers, directly with people, so stakeholders all around, and can make some difference, you know, direct difference to the farmers, you know. So when I was there, actually, I got very good understanding of livestock system. Why? Because I got to work in different livestock systems, various type, you know, small scale to large scale, helping commercial program development to very backyard program development, you know. Those farmers were so diverse, you know. So this all kind of activities made me feel like, oh, that's something to give farmer complete package, you know. So this is how I started my career, professional career, you know.
I didn't realize that you worked in a very similar sector, you know, working in extension and outreach and whatnot. That's very cool. I didn't realize that. Learn something new every day, right?
Well, that's the fun part of, you know, really, when we interact here, we simply, because we don't want to dig out that much in past, because we are so overwhelmed with current activities. So we are like focused on what we are doing. So when I came here, I started as a faculty. So my job is more like, you know, instruction, research. But my first love was extension. You know, honestly, I couldn't forget, you know. Do you remember your first class? That never forget, So in my professional career, extension was my first love, So I worked 7 years, despite I switched in research, teaching, still. So literally in the very first week I came to Hawaii, in Oahu, in the very first week, I was on Big Island in a farmers meeting. I'm telling you on the record. And thanks to other colleagues, you know, Dr. G and my, I used to work with Mark Dupont very much that. So I started working, although I'm like my limited time with research, extension services because of heavy load in teaching and research. But still, I couldn't give up the passion, you know. And I started working with farmer. And of course, then in rest is the history, you know, that how often we have been working together on different things here. So I still continue that to some extent as much as my time allows, to the best of my time I do. This is something I'll say in brief. That's my background rather than a researcher, more on extension part.
Well, that's good. I was like, you have a lot of projects going on, because I know Mele and I have both cooperated with you in the past and currently on a couple of different things. And like, as far as a researcher goes, you, I always feel like you do a lot of stuff that like pulls in applied people like myself as like an ag economist and Mele as like an animal science background. So I was like, I always really appreciate that, I guess. But yeah, you have so many projects going on. So could you share some of the projects related to poultry nutrition that you're involved in right now?
Definitely. Thanks, Shannon. You know, it is the very good point. Again, it goes back to my background, as I mentioned. Broad base is always important, but main theme of my research is covering the different aspects of nutritional related science, you know. And this basically objectives are to conduct and facilitate both basic and applied research. You know, yeah. Why? Because I want to answer some of the questions that are related to both local and global animal industries, yeah. Yeah. And of public health importance. As Shannon, you mentioned that you like, why? Because the project's outcome directly relates to the people's life. Then it is of meaning, you know?
Yeah.
But if you go on my research program, basically these are directed toward developing nutritional strategies, you know, to enhance the productivity and health of monogastric animals. So focus is there. And that ultimate goal, I want to develop decision models, which can help animal nutritionists and the livestock industry to develop effective feeding program, you know?
Yes.
Why that's important? Because the feed market is volatile, you know, very volatile.
Especially here. Yes. It's volatile on the mainland right now. And in the last basically 2 years with everything that's going on, I like to say BC, things are BC before COVID.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
I agree with you, Shannon, but I will add there, it's not only here, actually it's a global issue.
Yes,
and 100%. Also it's not only BC before or after COVID. Actually, it is always the case. But the thing is only sometimes it's like big waves, sometimes little waves.
Yeah.
That is very important. Another important thing is nowadays, our livestock industry's biggest challenge is what we call farming in post-antibiotic era, you know? Means people are looking for animal-based food, which is produced without antibiotic.
Right.
Another part of the important concern, which we all are seriously concerned, is environmental issue.
Yes.
We are sometimes blamed overly, you know. I don't accept that as some of the bloggers or some of the activists make the point. Yeah. But at the same time, we as an animal scientist genuinely also admit some sort of environmental concerns are in our production system. So I want to develop the decision model that can fit not only to address the cost of the feed or cost-effective production in this system, at the same time, which is environmental friendly, reducing less environmental burden, you know. That is one concern. I have been working evaluating some of the alternative feedstuffs, you know.
Oh, cool.
So, you know, in Hawaii, we have to think how we can grow different kind of animals with cost-effective way.
Yeah.
And we are struggling with the feedstuff cost. It is the most important cost in our animal production system, the highest cost, you know, basically.
Yes.
So that is the main focus. So determining nutritional value and also determining their optimum utilization in given condition. That is something my main focus of the project. And why, as I mentioned, all of this, my work's motivation is to serve the need of current day's consumers' demand.
Mm-hmm.
What is the demand of healthy and environmentally friendly animal production system?
Yes.
At the same time, we want to maintain the industry's competitiveness, you know?
Yes.
Yeah. Because if the industry is not there, how we are going to produce healthier, environmental friendly?
Right. Yeah.
Agreed. Our only surviving industry is not enough because we need to address the people's concern. So that is the focus of my research program.
Yeah, so many projects. And I know you've had so many projects dealing with poultry and visited the lab with you folks and whatnot. So have you guys come across any things within your studies, I guess, looking at poultry nutrition and any deficiencies that were commonly associated with some of the systems here in Hawaii?
Very good question, Meli. You know, but unfortunately, what I will say, I don't have any straight answer for your question. The reason is, you know, most of our Hawaiian farms are what? Small scale family owned, right?
Yeah.
Majority of, if you see poultry farms, hardly there is any what I call commercial scale.
Yeah.
Although officially they are labeled as commercial to some extent, you know. In that case, except few farmers, mostly what they are doing, feeding their animals or poultry with whatever is around. Sometimes scrap, sometimes waste, sometimes anything, sometimes even formulated diet they buy from, you know, the stores. So literally in that case, if they are feeding the formulated ration, what we call the imported feed here in Hawaii, we use the word, then that case, the feeds are what we call balanced diet. That will meet all the nutritional requirement. But if you simply give some sort of grain, whatever you have around, leftover or something, then we cannot expect that it will meet all the nutritional requirement of your body.
Yeah.
But that impact for sure, that is clearly visible, you know, what we call like seeing the output impact based information. So if you see our farmers, chicken are not growing well, you know, in our commercial setup, in a well balanced formulation program or feeding program, literally in 5 weeks now we are marketing our broilers. Market size is just in 5 weeks.
Yeah,
those farmers are not able to even harvest even after 8 or 9 or 10 weeks. Yeah. Why? That is clear indication of that there is nutritional deficiency.
Right.
They are not reaching the potential of their growth. You know, they cannot, because nutrition is must to reach or utilize the genetic potential.
Exactly.
So I'm sure I didn't give you a straight answer, but I think you got what I mean.
Yeah. No, but I think that that answers, I mean, that your last point about, you know, if your animals aren't meeting your expectations and growth, whether it be laying hens or broilers, you know, they're not getting the weight, you're not harvesting them at the dates you are, you're not collecting eggs every day them, then you need to address and think about what they're eating. What are they getting? How much are you giving it? And
what are they missing?
Adjust. Yeah. There's obviously a deficiency somewhere nutritionally wise that's leading them to not be productive and meet those goals. So
correct.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a great way to put it. You know, it's and sometimes pinpointing a single thing is not
it's
the thing. It's a group of things, right? So
well, especially because we've got all the climates, the different microclimates that exist here.
I think a common thing that I always see, you know, folks feel like, I don't know if it's like from books or from kid time and story time, that you kind of think, oh, chickens just need to have like this cracked corn or fed scraps or things like that. And they still were producing, you know, or whatnot, when it really comes down to the protein content of what they're eating and their that ability for that to provide that nutrition. Right. Am I wrong? Or is that kind of
You are absolutely right, Mili. I'm sure you remember the course, as you mentioned, I was not going to point out here because we are colleagues now, but you mentioned you took my course, 640 to advanced animal nutrition. If you remember some of the point I was talking, it's not that you just give cracked corn. It's not just give you like just like a soybean meal or whatever, right? It's like simply think. If I offer you in the morning one plate of rice, and the afternoon I'll give you good barbecue chicken, in the evening, I give you one bowl of salad. Is that right? We are feeding. But at the same time, if I merge these all kind of different feed and give you portion of that, that is going to be balance, right? In very simple layman language.
Exactly.
That applies in our animal case, you know, chicken case or any animals, basically. So now, farmer's case, if you simply throw the corn, it's like simply I give you a rice to eat, and you know, one big plate of rice. That's not going to fulfill nutritional goal. So it's about energy, you know, meeting protein, also meeting minerals, also meeting vitamins. The vitamins, all nutritional, what we call six classes of nutrients, must be sufficiently meeting. Right. Also important is, you know, they will be feeding same thing to the broiler, same thing to the layers. That's not the same thing. Basically, you know, because of the age of your animal, because of the production status of your animal, that has to be changed. Same like in our human, you know, we don't give the same food to our baby and same food to our elderly population or somebody who is really physically working hard. Literally think broiler. Why? Broiler need to grow, so something feed that will help them to be muscle mass, right? Growth. At the same time, layers, you don't want something that will grow them bigger. You don't want to have 10 kilos, you know, right?
Yeah.
You want standard size, what is healthy, we call, at the time optimum. Then after, you want to focus to have more and more egg laying, right?
Yeah.
Right. So your nutritional program should be directed toward maintaining their health. Don't forget that though, okay? Still, the laying hen has to maintain their body condition, but focus is on egg laying regularly of good quality. So nutritional program will change based on the age, based on the sex, based on the production status. These all things. But farmers, as you mentioned, what will they simply throw some crack corn, something, whatever they have, right?
Yeah.
It's not their fault. It's because of our system, you know, because backyard farming system is like that.
Yeah, that's very interesting. Cool. Good points. You talked a bit about gut health too, as well, in your research and some of the focuses. So how important is that, I guess, and how much impact does promoting good gut health in your poultry impact their production?
Oh boy, you raised the point, which is literally what I call super hot topic these days, you know, all around. all around. Even now, as you mentioned, even farmers are talking that. Forget about the scientific forum. Anywhere. And believe me, if you just go on my website, you can see my topics of presentation all around.
Oh, yeah.
I have given. Mm-hmm. More than half are related to nutrition and gut health.
Right. Yeah, I feel like you were into probiotics for animals before people even knew it was a thing. Based on what we went through, like we read that. Your site a little
Has been for a while, but definitely it was not as much as nowadays it is becoming popular. So I'm also not that young, you think. So definitely I'm working in this sort for like one and a half decade now, you know. So definitely when you see my name and you see like 15 years ago, I have a presentation on publication on that. It means I have been working on that for like more than a decade.
A while. You know? Yeah.
A while. Yeah. But you are right. Literally, this was not that super hot.
No.
You know, when you have problem, then you find solution.
Right.
So first thing you have to realize, I want to say you, why it is hot topic. That's more important, you know. Why so much works are done. Why it is being discussed so much. You have to understand the background of that. Why you need to study. And that is very essential. Now I want to remind you. You know, Hippocrates, a great philosopher, all of us, you know, like we call 400 BC, I believe, or something like that. I don't remember. He has quoted, and I always remember his word, life sits in the bowel. You know, in case you have heard this quote, Hippocrates. And actually, that is my big mantra, you know.
Yeah.
And that is so, same I remember when I was a child, my grandma will tell you the same thing, basically, that, you know, anything, the root problem is in our bowel. So if your bowel is good, you kind of feel fresh. And believe me, it seems like kind of gross, but in a day when your bowel is not fresh, you don't feel fresh.
Yeah.
Right?
That's true. Nobody will probably admit it, but that's different, so true.
Stomach surgeries, like joke, I 100% like, agree with that.
Yeah.
Seems like joke, seems like light statement, but that is very serious statement. So I didn't hesitate to use even on the record, you know. Why? Why?
Yeah.
Because anything and everything we eat goes in bowel, will be digested, absorbed, and then used in our body function. If anything goes wrong there, no matter what you ate, will not be utilized properly. You know? Now, that's the reason, whatever you want to eat, that need to be used by your body, and that is the gut function. But the problem here is, gut health, as you mentioned, Mele, it is a hot topic, and some of us are doing, not only me, a lot of people are doing all around. But it's so complex. Talked sometimes so lightly. It's literally, it's not so easy. It's really, really complex topic that we need to discuss. And people define it differently. The biggest problem comes, people define differently. Why? Because some people take, nutrient utilization. Some people will be talking about intestinal microbiota and they call it gut health. Some people will talk about immune system, they call gut health. Some people will talk about intestinal barrier function. All are right. But it is not going to serve your purpose. Why? Because you have to see a holistic approach. You want to see a whole elephant. So I believe gut health in a holistic approach. And whenever I work, in case you have seen my papers and works also, I look all components and then see, does it make sense or not? So gut health, as you mentioned, we are thinking how we can create an appropriate environment, I use the word, or like efficient system in the site, gut ecology, so that you feed your animal that will be used by it properly. And how it works, as I was talking, one component. So literally, we know in our gut or intestine, there are trillions of microbiotas, you know, and those are big players.
Yeah.
In general, whenever the word comes bacteria or microbiota, we get kind of negative sense, right? Like it should be harmful. That's not true. There are some harmful bacteria also, but there are lots of beneficial bacteria also.
Yeah.
So in gut health, when you are thinking, your target is to support, promote the growth of those beneficial bacteria and suppress the harmful bacteria or bad bacteria, or whatever you name it, enemy bacteria. And then that will help to boost your immune system. Immune system, you know, nowadays very common because of COVID also, you know, everybody have been talking, you know, boost your immune. So that is the capacity to fight against the diseases, you know. And that comes in different form. You know, it's not only one form, you know. So now intestinal immune system is different. You know, it's a system, you know, it's not immune organ. I use the word immune system because it's a system works not independently, rather with each other, you know, communicate with each other, responds to each other.
Yeah.
And that helps. Then another thing is, you know, what we call intestinal barrier. You know, in our intestine, intestine is kind of, now you can think of your water line, pipeline in your kitchen. So whatever we are eating goes in, but that from this pipeline need to go in our body, what we call absorption, right? So proper digestion occurs in the lumen, right? That's pipeline, but that need to go in our body inside to be used at the tissue level, cell level, right? So this all functions need to function in harmony, in balance state. Then it is really good gut health condition. And this is what we are working on, you know.
Nice.
My objective of this research program.
Yeah.
Antibiotic free animal production system. Why? Because that is public demand.
Yeah.
Because why? Because there are some concerns that suggest, or actually there are evidences that when you are feeding antibiotic as a growth promoter, some sort of antibiotic resistant bacteria will develop. And that is impacting our public health.
Yeah.
So you might have heard some country already banned use of antibiotic in feeds. In US, we only literally have, we have not banned it fully, but kind of regulated, it's fully regulated though, 2017 only. Now, looking for alternative to antibiotics, you know? So yeah, that is where your probiotic comes in. And probiotic is one of those alternatives. It's not. There are quite a few, but definitely probiotic, prebiotic, organic acids. These are major players. And my works, if you see, as you mentioned, lots of work with prebiotics and probiotics, more with even prebiotics. So probiotics are actually live bacteria itself. But which bacteria? Which are beneficial. As I mentioned earlier, some are beneficial, some are harmful. So probiotics are beneficial bacteria itself that we feed. So now they will go in the belly, the gut.
Yeah.
They will make their empire. You know, they will colonize. Yeah. Literally, they colonize, make empire. So now bad bacteria has no place out.
Yeah.
This is the way you are helping your animal grow healthy. But it's a little different in prebiotic. Prebiotics are basically fibrous components, basically the feedstuffs. But those are not digested by our enzymes, the body enzymes, neither in monogastric animals. Monogastric means pig, poultry, or we human, but those bacteria in our gut will use that as feed. So probiotic, as I mentioned, are the live bacteria culture itself, right? But prebiotics are feed for the bacteria in our gut, you know? So literally, those are basically carbohydrates. You know, in carbohydrate, different types of what we call oligosaccharides. Those are not digested by our body enzymes, endogenous enzyme, but are the food for microbes. And those microbes will eat that and they will produce the compounds that is beneficial for us. Okay. Also, now when they feed on it, that create good environment now that again become good for other bacteria. So it's kind of vicious cycle, you know, good does good, you know. So, but, you know, earlier concept and still concept prebiotics is quite common. If you go in the story, you'll find. But then my research actually, definitely I can proudly tell you, we are one of the few in the beginning, now a lot of group does, started this concept. Not only us, but few of us around the world. So rather than having prebiotics isolated feeding your animal, which is not logical, for human is fine, you buy pills, you buy powders, right? But anyway, can our feed stuff itself serve the same purpose or not? That was our hypothesis. And we started working on, during my PhD, actually, that was the main theme. Although I worked the like pig model, you know, I was using pig, not poultry then. So, and then we tested varieties of feed stuff, which were like, you know, rich in fiber, rich in a resistant starch, we call like fiber, especially those will have similar prebiotic functions like beta-glucan, we call, you know. And those are found in your barley, oat, you know, primarily. So we fed barley and oat and we tested in the intestinal environment, you know, metabolites produced and the microbial changes, and we found that works. So the same concept I carry on until now. And I believe I will be continuing in future also, because that is so huge. That is so important.
So important.
And yeah, so anytime when you see by another big law with the word is by dietary fiber. If you see in my all a lot of papers, you know, dietary fiber talks, that is the word. Why? Rather than buying the prebiotics from the store and feeding to your animal, which is kind of not that practical or adding that, why not to formulate ration or diet with fibrous feedstuff that will help your farmer?
Well, that's what I was like, I was going to ask. That was fine, like an optimal ration for this group of pork in order to like maximize like feed efficacy, I guess.
Yeah, very genuine question, Shannon. Yes, we did actually a lot of studies. Not only with pork, even with chicken here in Hawaii also. Nice. So what we are doing, varieties of feedstuff, including our some of the typical Hawaiian.
Oh.
And I'll give you the name. You'll be surprised to hear that. Macadamia nut cake.
Mm-hmm.
You only heard macadamia nut chocolate, macadamia nut coffee, macadamia nut tea. I give macadamia nut cake to my chicken and feel big. Yeah. You know why? When I came here, you know, I visited to our local oil crusher here in Konya, and they were throwing macadamia nut cake. And I saw, oh no, that is very valuable. Actually, they have to send to dumping site or landfill. And now, when it goes to landfill, means what? Environmental burden. You know, in Hawaii, we are on island. We have no land to fill. That is another burden. Although small, but it's like significant contribution. So that I did a lot of work, analyze nutritional value, then functional value, then did trial with pig in vitro model, also in the chicken. Mm-hmm. And we figured out you can feed the macadamia nut cake to your animal. And that has not only nutritional value, it's really rich in oils and protein also. Of
that's
course,
what I was thinking. I was like, oh, it's high in protein, high in like fat potentially. It and is, it would be like super yummy.
Yes. At the same time, because macadamia nut cake, which is like, you know, the cell, after extraction of oil, is rich in fiber. Now that helps to modulate beneficial bacteria, help the growth of beneficial bacteria.
Nice.
And that is one example I named you. We have done several other studies with different types of oligosaccharides and other fibers. Mm-hmm. And that found to be helpful in doing the same function, what we call prebiotics.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
So we have been using this model regularly, using different types of isolated compound as well as our local feedstock or also like a common feedstock, but with that functional value. So that's definitely a big topic and also very important topic. The reason, again, same as I mentioned, because there is demand for animal produce without antibiotic, right?
Right.
And that can be made by using these, some of the alternatives resources, you know?
Yeah. Well, and I think the mac nuts, I was like, I know there are like pork producers, is it in Portugal that feed acorn? So, and I know the mac nuts are really high. And I was like, even the cake, I would imagine it's a really high quality like meat product or protein product. So,
yes.
You know, is it that way with the poultry as well then, or just?
That's right.
Okay.
Actually, we did a trial, even study, even with the farm condition. Actually, what you see in my background, as I mentioned, pastured chicken, thanks to our farmer, you know, he cooperates, Julius, with me. I work with him for like, continuously we are working for last 6-7 years since I came, actually.
Oh, that's great.
We did a field trial there, not only in my farm trial on campus, because on campus research environment, in practical application, using macadamia nut. And we found if you use up to 15% of macadamia nut, your animal will grow very well without compromising growth performance, you know.
Oh, that's good.
And remember, you may think it's 15%, but 15% is a significant contribution.
Mm-hmm.
When you are counting for single penny and cents, that is going to contribute your cost reduction. At the same time, two more benefit, not only cost. One was that environmental thing. Remember, we talked, we now in Hawaii, not a single pound of macadamia nut cake goes to landfill. All are used by our pig farmers, mostly by pig. Why? Because they have relation with this, you know, miller, and it's not evidently available. It's not sufficiently available now. Now, rather than going in landfill, they are in queue. Can I get it?
Yeah.
All done.
Yeah.
Problem solved. Second thing, health benefit. As I mentioned, this is giving you functional benefit, promote the health of your animal. So all the way, and that's not the only one. There are several we have done and found to be useful.
That's good. That's so good, right? To have those connections and have farmers being able to,
you know, improve all those things, not putting that extra stuff in the landfill and using it for production. That's awesome. So does, so I know like when we feed, when we've had wild pork that have eaten mac nuts and whatnot, it changes the quality and the taste of the meat. How does the mac, have you found any differences in the meat quality of the poultry that's influenced by feeding the mac nut cake?
Very nice question. Mele, I have no data to give you because I have not published publicly yet, but we did that. We thought this question in the very beginning because I was thinking from animal nutritionist point of view, but at the same time, as I mentioned, I always think of consumer, you know, and we did that actually from the field trial, what I saw, discussed to you earlier. At that point, we collected the meat sample also. And on campus, you know, our we have in our department, sensory panel review team, they did sensory evaluation. So we have not statistically analyzed the data, so I cannot tell you exactly. But what we got in the, what we call preliminary data, it's no complaint. Actually, people liked it. But there is no any formal thing I can tell you it is superior or not. But definitely it is not inferior. And that's expected because macadamia nut contains, you know, high amount of
fat, good for
health.
Yeah, you know? I definitely think with pork, like even the wild pork, when you've had it and it's been on mac nut, it's way better. Than
I was going to ask you, Melee, what your opinion was.
Yeah, that's why I was like, it's got to be good for, like, I would think for poultry and the meat quality and even like probably the eggs, right? I mean, I've had
eggs. I don't know. I don't know because we have not tested any, we have not done any studies, so I cannot tell you when you ask me. But chicken, yes. Pork, yes. I can confidently tell you because we have already tested, we have done trials. Actually, pork, our farmer, you know, here in Wahoo, two of our farmers on Wainai, they are regularly using mac nut cake in their feeding program. And I have been working with them from the very beginning, since I came, literally, very first week I met them. First week I went to NI. Since then, we are regularly working. So that is working. And that is mac nut is literally, as you are, as you mentioned, it's right. It helps to improve not only the growth, but also the quality of the meat.
Yeah,
that's good.
I cannot tell you pinpointing what exactly it attributes, but what I can assume, because macadamia nut cake is rich in unsaturated fatty acid, which is what we call healthy fatty acid, unlike saturated is not. So that will be, and fat is always transmitted in the meat. That we have proven in our previous studies, you know. So I can assume, although I don't have data, I can assume that will be translated and will be better meat. That I'm very confident, although I don't have any data. I feel confident though, you know.
Yeah.
That's my experience.
But I think some of the anecdotal stuff is important as well, right? Because we've seen it, it's common around other species So
that's right.
Yeah. I think backyard, you know, poultry production has grown you know, over the past few years. And I would think even since the pandemic, more people are starting to produce stuff in their backyard and whatnot. Oh, yeah. So what kind of tips can you offer for the poultry backyard, I guess, poultry producers, as well as our large producers out here in Hawaii, as far as maintaining poultry health and nutrition in their flocks?
Let me separate your question in two sets here, okay? First on backyard, then on commercial or large scale or general. First thing, if you see a backyard, definitely that's something what I call exciting and positive change, you know? And we are seeing Hawaii. And recently, I saw one of our local news article also was a big on backyard farm, you know. And people have started doing that here and there all around, you know. And it is contributing positively, you know, in the local meat production, especially pandemic has created so much supply chain disturbances.
Oh,
and
my
also,
God,
always we are, Hawaii, always food insecure. So even a small contribution is big contribution, you know. I firmly believe, you know, some people will say, ah, it's just a small. No, a small makes a big, you know. One meal, two. So my suggestion will be backyard farmer, although they are just having a couple of birds or little, maybe just 5, 10, 20, still they should know how to do farming. Still they should know the basics of poultry raising, you know. They don't have to know the rocket science. They don't have to know all the details. And we are here, you know. We Sitar is here, you people are there, I'm here, all of us, our team is there to help them. Anywhere they shout, we are always there. That we are proud of that. We have been serving our Hawaiian farmers. Yeah, we will always help them. One important thing I'll say, they must maintain biosecurity protocol. Even they have only one chicken.
Yeah.
One single chicken can create big problem for all around whole. We are island, mm-hmm. a small state, you know. If any disease comes one or other way, now in that case, that can create a big problem for us. Mm-hmm. So I will suggest first thing first, make sure to maintain biosecurity protocol on their farm. And yeah. we are here to help them develop right. their plan. Although it is small farm, it's very simple. It's not complicated, no, you know.
Yeah.
Second thing is that they should routinely practice vaccination program, health checkup, although they have only few birds, you know. And that is sometimes overlooked. Simply think, I have just a small flock, you know, it's not big deal. But a small can create big problem that we have. And another beauty of that or benefit of that, if they do this practice, mm-hmm. no need to mention good feeding practice. Naturally, I'll be advocating that by default. Yeah. And we have been talking that.
Yeah.
That will also help them. So it's not going to harm them. Even a small investment on that vaccine or drug is there, but that is going to help them to grow efficient, mm-hmm. better mm-hmm. animal, you know, and that is important.
Right.
So that will be my suggestion to backyard farmer. So literally, even you are having a small flock, maintain biosecurity protocol,
mm-hmm.
regularly maintain vaccination and health measurement plan, and also feed them at the best you can with balanced ration.
Yeah.
Then they will harvest the efficient and good quality meat in very short period, relatively. That will be my suggestion for backyard farmer. For commercial farmer, we have lots of resources all around. Mm-hmm. And for commercial farmer, definitely I will say, if you want to do business, do it. If you don't do, then don't do it. It should not be hobby farming. Commercial farmers should go in very details plan, each and everything. Of course, business up to business plan, which Shannon is expert. I'm not. You know? Yeah. Shannon is expert of that. Not me. I don't know about those kind of things. But in general, what I can say, because you are in business, remember, livestock farming is a business, enterprise. Mm-hmm. If you can make money, then only you can sustain in this business, then you can continue it. If not, you will be out of business after one or two cycle.
Yeah.
Do you think that hurts to the farmer? No. That does not hurt to the only farmer A or farmer B. Rather, that hurts to the whole farming system. Why? Because that will spread a negative impact, you know, to the other farmers that this business is not viable here. People will look only the output, the business failed. They will not look why the business failed.
Yeah.
You know, and that we have seen here, that we have witnessed here in Hawaii. People simply say, oh, it's not doable business. But they don't think why it is not doable, why it failed. Mm-hmm. You want to solve the problem, you know, identify the problem and then find a solution rather than simply saying the result, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So my suggestion for commercial farmer will be having really business plan.
Yeah.
All the feeding, nutrition and management plan, all the health plan, all the biosecurity plan, and then do it properly. Of mm-hmm. course, they want to know the basics of that production system, what they are doing, and then consult with the expert or subject matter, especially time to time, people like us, you know, who are there mm-hmm. to help them. That so I have complete two different messages for two different farming systems.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think it is a little bit, it is different, you know, whether you're just it raising is. Your own flock in the backyard or doing it on a production mm-hmm. and a commercial correct. Standpoint. So
correct.
There are different points that you need to really address. So, you know, I've learned so much about you today, Dr. Zha. Haven't known in all the sectors that you've worked. Right. It's such rewarding work. It is working in extension and providing the outreach.
Yeah.
Oh, well, thank you so much, Dr. Zha, for joining us today. We're so glad you're able to be on the show and taking the time to talk story with Shannon and I about poultry nutrition. And we learned so much more about you and your journey, I should say, academic journey here and as you've been here in Hawaii. So I hope our listeners are able to gain some insight into poultry nutrition and how it impacts your flock.
Yeah.
And thanks for having me. Actually, thanks for giving me a chance to share some of my experiences, some of my thoughts and some of the information we have. And hopefully it will be helpful to our farmer, primarily to our Hawaiian farmers and beyond. Mm-hmm. And as I mentioned earlier, we at Sitar people are always there mm-hmm. To help our farmer, our people, and we'll be more than happy always to help as much as we can do with our resources.
Make sure to join our Facebook page, the Livestock Extension Group, if you haven't already. And be sure to visit the UHCTAR Extension website and our YouTube channel listed in the show notes.
For additional information about this topic, see Dr. Jha's animal nutrition website listed in the show notes of the podcast and the description box of our YouTube page. Thanks again for listening to the Livestock Fala'ao. And before we go, show some love for your favorite podcast. That's us.
That's us.
Leaving us a review on Apple Podcasts or your favorite platform. And stay tuned for next month's episode. Ahui ho and mahalo everyone for listening.